This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Just got a free coffee with my EarnIFI points.
Your what?
The points I get with the new EarnIFI app from BP and Amoco. I got 250 for signing up and more every time I fill up or buy anything in the C-store.
Oh, can you use points for fuel?
Of course.
And discounts and deals?
On anything.
Oh, like chips?
Mm-hmm.
Sodas?
You got it.
The actual slushy machine.
Only what's actually for sale. But you do get double the points for the first 90 days. Just go to EarnIFIRewards.com to download the app.
Available at participating locations only. App content is subject to change.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I am Alex.
I am Justin.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, or Instagram. Maybe you're listening later on the podcast listening platform of your choice. Wherever you're checking the podcast, it's all good. Pete, one of our compatriots, is out this week. He is on a business retreat. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but he is on a retreat with his business going to see the Joker 2 on a loop. Is that what he's doing?
Yeah, they're saying it's a five-day Joker 2 immersive experience. Oh, so nice. They're going to follow that from beginning to end. Just like, it's like a ride almost. It's going to go to Arkham, be there for all of the no spoilers here, but
oh, yeah.
Great stuff that happens.
There's a lot you can spoil in that movie. They're in Arkham, and then they're in a courtroom.
Can you spoil something that's truly spoiled? It's already like, you pick it up off the shelf and it's like, oh, this is spoiled. I'll put it back.
Well, anyway, check out our Joker 2 review in the Sons of a Gun podcast feed. But we have three amazing guests for you this evening, so let's not delay any further and bring in our first one. He is the creator of Kill Shakespeare. There's a bunch of stuff happening in that world we're going to talk about. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Anthony Del Cole. Anthony, hello.
Hello, Alex and Justin. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Oh my gosh, great seeing you again. I feel like maybe a decade ago, we bothered you constantly at every single con we went to. So it's bringing back good feelings already. So I appreciate it.
Thanks. You're making me feel old. I appreciate that.
No, we're young. We're getting younger. We're fresher.
Yeah. Benjamin Button style, yes.
Exactly. Well, we're sucking the essence of our guests. I don't want to get into that too much. Oh. Or are we doing it? Don't even worry about it. But let's talk about the two things that are going on in the world of Kill Shakespeare. Just out on October 1st from Gemstone, you got the first folio, which collects a huge amount of material per the name in the world of Kill Shakespeare. And then coming up on November 19th, which was teased on Free Comic Book Day, you've got Romeo versus Juliet is coming up with an oversized tale. It's a Western of Juliet hunting Romeo.
They've been grinding each other's gears for so long. It's about time they settled their beef.
Yeah.
Now, not to stay on the we're old thing, but one of the first things I wanted to ask you is you have been doing this for a while now, and successfully, mind you, but what keeps you coming back to it after so long?
The bard just won't die. I've tried to kill him for 12 years.
Yeah,
he's just not.
It's not going well. You're not killing him. He's only getting stronger.
I know. He's a vampire. No, I mean, Kill Shakespeare was the first title that I ever put out as a creator, co-creator, co-writer. I mean, I absolutely love the process. Myself and Connor McCreary and our artist, Andy Belanger, we had a lot of fun. We put out four volumes. There was a fifth volume that came out a couple years after. And then What can you say? Went off into the wilderness for a bit. There were some publishing and legal problems and whatnot. And then about 2-3 years ago, we were able to get all the rights back. So we went through
it. You got sued by William Shakespeare the 16th. Showed up and was like, hey, that's my dad's stuff.
I actually did that. I did that. I put that out on April 1st, 2011, I believe, as a blog post on our website. And within minutes, everybody was like emailing me going like, what? You've got to be kidding. Like, it was like, I put together like a full cease and desist order, like letter.
That's hilarious.
It was from the estate of William Shakespeare, but it was from the law firm of DeVere, Bacon, and whatever else. Like, just, there's all these little sister references. But the first 15, 20 minutes, I got all these emails from friends and family going like, are you serious? Like, this is happening? How dare you? You need to fight this. You need to fight this. And then someone eventually realized, oh, wait a minute, it's April 1st. But yeah, so I mean, no, we were able to get the rights back about 2.5 years ago. The publishing rights, the film rights, film and TV rights, which were with Universal, the game rights, everything. And so, to be honest, there was about 5 years or so where I was busy working on other things, in terms of, like, I was doing a bunch of stuff with Business Insider, some stuff with Dynamite, some stuff in the podcasting world. But you know, you always miss your first child, even when you see them off to university. I kind of missed it. And then in that span, you know, you always go, well, if we were to relaunch it or to put it out again, like what would the story be? And then all of a sudden that central defining image of Romeo and Juliet in a high noon Western style showdown came to me. I'm like, and so, yeah, when we got the rights back, we eventually partnered up with Gemstone, and here we are, you know, about a month and a bit away from the release of it. So I'm quite excited.
So the first folio, though, that, like we said, collects a bunch of material. I assume the idea there was kind of to prep people after these 5 years away, being like, hey, remember this? This is the story. This is what's going on here leading into this new thing.
Absolutely. I've had so many people over the years, especially the last couple of years, because Kill Shakespeare's been out of print for the last 2-3 years, that have come up to me like, where can I find a copy? I want to hear, you know, whether I'm at New York Comic Con or a convention or at a book signing or whatnot. People are like, oh, what is this? How can I get a copy? I'm like, you can get used copies on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Maybe if you like write something, if you write something in the wind, maybe eventually you get it. Or if you say prayer, you know, if you say prayer on a star or something.
Three
like that.
Witches in the Woods is a great source for stuff that's lost.
Exactly.
In my experience.
A magical garden of some sort. But yeah, so I mean, there were a lot of people who just, they hear about the concept. This is so cool. How can I read it? I'm like, unfortunately, you can't. Like, there's copies are limited. Even myself, the last couple of years of New York Comic Con, I've had to bring used copies that I bought on Amazon, I'm gonna lose money, but I want to make sure that people, you know, people want to read this and they want to find out about the world. So anyway, so this is a chance for people to re-explore or discover it for the first time. I mean, as we've talked about, it's been a decade. Oh, what a decade it's been with us.
Nothing bad's happened, in my opinion.
No, I haven't noticed any change.
Just a great decade.
Strong decade. That's why we immerse ourselves in texts from 400 years ago.
Exactly. And Joker 2 spoilers.
Yes, very light spoilers. Bad things happen. Yes. Yes. But speaking of bad things happening, the characters from Shakespeare, what was it like to dive back into these timeless characters after that break you're talking about? Because I feel like all of these characters are things we know sort of our whole lives because we're exposed to them constantly in every form of media. But when you deep dive into them, there's sort of the depth. There's so much depth there.
For me, it was sort of like a high school reunion. I mean, it had been 10 years since we all graduated together, 5 years or so. Let's say it was the fifth year anniversary. So it was a homecoming. We came back and it was kind of like we hadn't left. I mean, Juliet, the reason that Kill Shakespeare's done so well and the reason that I've enjoyed working and all of us have enjoyed working on Kill Shakespeare is because, as you said, these characters have survived for 400 years because they are the greatest characters ever created. I will fight you on that. I mean, Juliet, Hamlet, Othello, Richard III, Falstaff, Puck, all these characters are fantastic. They're three-dimensional, they're conflicted, they're funny, they're sad, they're tragic, they're happy. Like, there's all these great things about it. And so to be able to dive back in and rewrite them again, and write them not only for those that know the Kill Shakespeare world, but also the whole point of Romeo versus Juliet, it's a new jumping off point as well. I kind of call it a remix of both Shakespeare as well as Kill Shakespeare, where you don't need to have read the original five volumes. You don't need to read first Kill Shakespeare first folio or second folio. That'll come out next spring. But you can easily jump into, ooh, look at that graphic. But yeah, you can easily get into this world because it's, everyone's heard of Juliet, everyone's heard of Romeo and Hamlet, and everyone understands the confines of, you know, like a Western. You know, this I build this as this, it's the Magnificent Shakespeare Seven. You know, Julie has to rally in order to protect a small town nunnery. Julie has to rally her old allies, Hamlet, Othello, Puck, and others against the nefarious forces that are about to invade the small town, led by her ex. Wait for it. Spoiler, minor, Romeo.
That's great.
Well, talk us through this a little bit. So if you're listening to this, obviously you don't know what's going on here, but if you're watching live, you're seeing some of the stuff that's going on. So you're starting with Romeo and Juliet. I mean, this is kind of a broader question, but like you're starting with these images that are very reminiscent of Romeo and Juliet, and then it builds from there. How far can you pull these characters before they start to break? What sort of flexibility have you found with them?
I found a reasonable amount of flexibility over the years. I mean, we put Juliet through a lot, through hell and back. Almost
she
literally.
Famously goes through a lot. That's sort
she
of
goes
her
through
whole
a lot.
Thing.
She goes through a lot. Yeah, that's sort of her brand. We put through a lot. Our defining mantra since day number one has always been: we need to remain true to the characters. So in this one here, both in Romeo and Juliet, for Romeo versus Juliet, as well as Kill Shakespeare, Juliet has. I mean, Juliet survived, and she's seen a lot. I mean, as you said, like she'd been through a lot in Verona, and here she is now 7-8 years later. She's gone through this rebellion. She's the leader of this prodigal rebellion that takes place in Kill Shakespeare. And now we're 6 months after where we left off. And even then she's seen a lot. She's been this lone, you know, she's been on the run. She's been hunted down by Titus's gang and Lady Macbeth's gang. But she's been, you know, she's been in hiding. But there's still this lore, this fable. Everyone knows, and this is what, for those that can't see this, we're actually seeing the first few pages of talk about this is the story of Romeo and Juliet originally, and then this is the continuation of it. But yeah, everybody knows who Juliet is, and so she has to go in hiding. And so finally she's able to find this small town nunnery that will take her in, but then they have a secret that they're hiding. But yeah, I mean, to get back to the question, again, we go back to these are the greatest characters of all time, and you can do a lot with them because they are phenomenal. I mean, Hamlet, you can kind of throw him through hell and back, Othello, and they have their funny sides, their witty sides, their dark sides, their brooding sides. But yeah, as long as you stay true to the essence of who the character was in the original stories, we're fine.
Well, speaking now, when of the are we essences, gonna get... oh, sorry. Speaking of the essences of characters, I just wanted to mention that every week on the show we have a professional chef down in New Orleans named Brett Macris, and he either creates or curates a cocktail for us on the show. And this week, inspired by this, he created Hamlet Was Right, a cocktail with gin, lime juice, honey, black pepper, and a lime wheel or wedge. You are drinking it right now, Justin. A quick review.
I am. Very good. It's sort of like a spicier, what's the cocktail? Honeybee, maybe? Or gin and lemon. This is gin lime with pepper. It's very good.
Mm-hmm. Because it has, and it's called this because it has two bees, I assume.
Yes. What?
For honey, two bees.
Yeah.
Two bees.
Yeah. You squeeze the bees. You squeeze it gently. Yeah,
I know how you make honey. You don't need to describe it for me. We actually have a question from Stray Bullet, the chef. He says, how does Hamlet fit in there? And is it the same Hamlet? Presumably talking about Romeo versus Juliet.
Yes, it is the same Hamlet in this one here. In the Kill Shakespeare first folio, as for those that are familiar with the series or those will dive in because of the reading the first folio, we take Hamlet from the play. He's banished from Denmark. He's mourning the loss of his father. He's on a ship. He's attacked by pirates. And then he washes ashore on Illyria, this strange land where all of Shakespeare's characters are together. So yeah, it is the exact same character. Do we remain true to him? Yes. I mean, he is melancholy and brooding in some parts. He's funny and witty at other parts. He's outgoing and he'll make long speeches in some parts. In other parts, he just won't say a thing. So yeah, I think that is the essence. People always ask me what my favorite play, my favorite Shakespeare play is or was. And prior to working on Kill Shakespeare, it was Othello, because I just love the core essence of it's about jealousy. It's about one man who's jealous of the other man. I mean, there's all kinds of different interpretations, but like what and how and determined, driven by that jealousy, he's determined to drive the other man mad and like ruin him. And to me, that's just the essence of pure drama. But having worked on Hamlet now for years, over a decade now, Hamlet is now my favorite play and my favorite character just because he's phenomenal. He's phenomenal.
So mopey.
That's the thing. Everyone says he's mopey and everyone's like, oh, he's wishy-washy. He can't make up a decision. He can't make up his mind. And that is this case in some respect, but the best interpretations of Hamlet are the ones where he's funny, he's witty, he's kind of crazy, he's acting all over the place. Like he's the life of the party one moment, and the next party he's a guy in the corner drinking the Hamlet was right man. Drink. Exactly, yeah. He's a phenomenal character. I would argue maybe other than maybe Don Quixote, Hamlet I think is the greatest character ever created.
Wow,
I'll fight you on that.
No, well, we're definitely going to fight. You keep challenging us. It's going to happen. Well, let me ask you, what's the sort of smallest character from, like, you have any Coriolanus dropping in here? Where's our King Henry V drop in here? Is there
a... Oh, we have a lot of small characters. Yeah, we have small little characters. Every time we've done Kill Shakespeare, we always throw in small little Easter eggs. And we've had I had the fortune this time specifically. I had a Shakespeare consultant, Dr. Toby Malone, came on. He worked on with us when we did our Kill Shakespeare stage play back in like X number of years ago. And so he was I was lucky enough to get him to come on board. And so he's the one that he would rewrite my these and thous and be like, Anthony, what are you doing? Like you want to pull
thou here because the characters are talking at a distance.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, there were all these little Easter eggs that I'd place in there and be like, oh, that's witty. Oh, I would have never expected that. And there's a couple that he recommended. Yes, there are smaller characters. My favorite one that I put in, is Antonio from Merchant of Venice. He has relatively small role in the play. Well, he has a fairly big role in the play, but in this one he has a fairly small role. The reason I enjoyed putting him in is the very first Shakespeare play I ever read was Merchant of Venice. By grade nine. In grade nine, I had a horrible teacher, so I had to teach it. I had to basically teach it myself, and I realized how great it was. So I've always been looking for the opportunity to put Antonio in, and lo and behold, I did put him in. Another one is a character by the name of Bardolph, who I will admit, I did not know that much about him until I was just combing through the list of potential characters. And the name just kind of popped up. I'm like, Bardolph, what? That's like one of the craziest names I've seen in Shakespeare. and the bear from Midwinter's Tale, or Winter's Tale. There's the famous stage direction, Exit Pursued by a Bear. That bear shows up in this.
Great. Oh, he comes back. That's a celebrity. He's sort of the modern celeb.
Back. The bear comes back, yes. Pursued by Bear.
Enter Pursued by Bear. Talk about a rewrite. That's fresh. That's a hot take. Alex, what's your favorite Shakespeare, if I may ask?
Gosh, I don't know. Probably Twelfth Night, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
I'm not sure. I always really liked Twelfth Night. I think we did it or scenes from it in college, and that's probably why it stuck with me. But I really enjoyed that show.
I'm basic, so it's Midsummer Night's Dream.
There you go.
Funniest. And Tempest on the other side.
Before we let you go, though, so these two books are coming out. Now that you've got the itch again, I realize we're still a month away from Romeo versus Juliet, but are you thinking about more, or are you just going to kind of see how this goes and play it by ear from there?
The practical answer is that we have to see, we have to play by ear and see how it goes. But I mean, of course, when Connor and I sat down and we realized we had the opportunity to bring Kill Shakespeare back into the world, we asked ourselves, what do we want to do? And of course, the Romeo versus Juliet story was the first one that came up, and we were both excited by that. And I was excited to dive in and write that. But yeah, we have plans for another four books beyond this. If we, go out and buy, for those that are listening to this and are intrigued, go out and buy the books, and you will help us make sure that there are another four. That'll bring the entire Kill Shakespeare saga to an end.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
All right. A lot of folks in the chat liking the book just from our conversation.
Anthony, it was great seeing you again.
We do have to fight. They want to see us fight.
Yes. Yeah.
We'll go somewhere empty to fight, a Joker 2 theater.
Wow.
Alex, bringing it back.
Wow.
Anthony, thank you so much. Great seeing you again. Good luck with the book. It's awesome. I'm excited for everybody to check it out.
Thanks for having me on the show, guys. It's been a blast.
You bet. All right. Later.
All right, there we go. Once again, the books. Well, books are called First Folio from Kill Shakespeare. That is out already from Gemstone. And the other one is Romeo versus Juliet. I believe it's a Kill Shakespeare Adventure, I believe is the full name. That's coming out on November 19th from Gemstone, so definitely check that out. Let's bring another returning guest who we haven't seen in a long time. Boy, Justin, it's like Old Homes Week here, you know?
No one knows what that means, Alex, and stop trying to inject it into our podcast.
So you sound like Old Homes Week.
You sound like an old-timey northeastern like lighthouse keeper or something.
Oh, yeah. All right, we are going to welcome back. He is the creator behind Digital Bardos, which is on Kickstarter right now. Ladies and gentlemen, King Klaus, hello.
Welcome. Hey. Hey.
Good seeing you again. Excited to talk about this project. So this is on Kickstarter now. You've got 6 days to go.
Yeah.
It is wild. I say that complimentarily.
Yes.
But
yeah.
You pitch it. I was going to try to pitch it, but I'd rather have you pitch it.
You guys have I've been looking at this transhumanist stuff for like 15 years, and I think a lot of people are just now like hearing about these ideas of people who have trillions of dollars or billions of dollars and want to live forever. And I always thought it was hilarious, and I always like the cult of personalities from like the 60s and 70s, the gurus who want to like make everyone join their cult. And I thought, would it be great to like put those two ideas together? And thus, Digital Bardos was born. Basically, it's like the first tech trillionaire who develops this virtual reality system. And he kind of wants to like lure all mankind into it because he wants to like enlighten us all and get us to this digital apotheosis. But the book's all about like the practical side of sort of these utopian dreams that we invent as humans. And so it's like, what happens to the physical world as we're creating paradise in a virtual world, like as we slowly destroy the external world? So that's the crux of the book. The first issue is kind of like a prologue, so you really get a feel for the world itself. So where we're at in the story is basically just establishing the all space. And it's funny, I did Hivemind a couple years ago, and it went like gangbusters right away. Like I was hitting $1,000 every day. So this one, I was like, I can just soft pitch it. And I didn't set up any of the stuff. I was like, it's $2,500. We're about halfway through. I have some heavy hitters to get through, but like I'm really interested in just getting more backers on board. So anyone who's not familiar, I've done Void Trip with Image Comics. That was about, it was like 6 years ago. And then I went off and started self-publishing. I'm like a stay-at-home dad. So my full-time job is keeping two children alive. And we're homeschoolers because we don't want to like, you know, give our kids to the government. But because we chose to homeschool and teach our kids this way, it's like the comics take a back seat. So, but for me, this is like my pet project, and it's nuts. I'm probably going to spend the next 10 years working on it, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, go ahead, Justin.
Well, I was going to say, it is very fun, and I love you take this rather like trippy, yet very sort of feels rooted in our current reality, a lot of it, like letting the physical world go for the sake of like getting deeper into AI and all of this stuff that you're talking about. But the art and the vibe of the comic is so fun and light.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it's because the reason is like the right dark, I'm sure you guys remember Hivemind, pretty dark dystopian. Yeah. And I wanted to go even darker. I was like, how can you go darker than that? I was like, oh, you just got to put some humor in it. Because then you like slowly lead somebody down this path. And it's only like a couple issues in where you realize, holy, holy shit. I forgot what you
said. I believe this now. I'm in his cult.
Yeah. So the first one feels light and fluffy because it's kind of like luring the reader into this beautiful world. And it's really in the couple of the later issues where you start to see like the fucked up cult shit that happens in like these big, huge followings. I mean, the other thing too, I don't know if you guys, the whole idea of like being YouTube stars and all that, it's so new. People don't realize how crazy that is if you're kind of like a teenager these days, but you know, Elvis used to be the king, right? So he was the biggest thing anyone ever knew. And I like that idea that somewhere in the future, there's gonna be another Elvis that like, you can't help but know about, love him or hate him. So this character is supposed to represent that too, but it's sort of from that the same idea of like a influencer pop star, like you know, he's kind of a little bit of everything.
So this involves somebody basically like uploading their consciousness into
exactly the first successful upload, and like
right
the idea, I mean, if you guys read the first issue, it's like everyone else gave up because it was too nuts. Like you're talking to this AI who seems enlightened and they're like pitching you all these things about life that as a human you can't, haven't even been able to understand. And so the Darren is the only one who can maintain himself in the beta version. So he becomes the almighty Darren, which as you'll see, it's really like this part of his ego that gets like heightened inside of this AI and becomes a digital god. So it controls the all space, which is the universe that everyone ends up downloading into. And I know there's been some stuff like this out there, but I'm sure you guys have seen like the cartoon style. It's sort of, it has its own flavor. So it's definitely, Darren is like able to bifurcate himself and like be in multiple places. And he has like multiple arms like Vishnu or Ganesh, you know, so he's like this really trippy digital god.
I have a fair sense of it just by hearing you talk about this, but what is your take on this stuff in real life?
Like, oh my God. I mean, you just watch the stock market. I mean, like NFTs, I think all these things have practical purposes, the blockchain and everything. But in order to, let's be fair, to be make billions of dollars, you have to convince people you're making a product that's like changing the world and earth shattering. And AI, I mean, the stuff that's out there now, I hate when people call it AI because it's not artificial intelligence, it's really advanced computer graphics material. I mean, I've worked in the computer graphics industry. It's basically a lot of trick work. You know, you're getting a computer to compile words together to make it seem like someone's talking, which seems just crazy and bonkers because we didn't have this, you know, 50 years ago. But as an idea, it's still, it needs the component parts. It's not like you can just turn it loose and it figures out what comedy is. It can make memes. Like it's not that kind of intelligent. It just, it can do, it can act as a tool really fast. So
it can do a mediocre job at stuff that we also do.
Yeah. Like digital bars, I almost reached a few years ago, but the NFT stuff and the metaverse stuff was so big, I didn't want people to like think that's what I was talking about. Because the truth, like a true virtual reality is, I don't know if it's even possible. That's part of what it's kind of talks about in the book, but it's like way, way out there. I don't think we're going to be, you know, we can trick ourselves with virtual. I used to work in video games, and it's like there's really good tools to trick the eye. And we understand, the fact is humans understand the mind so well, we can trick it. And that's what happens in a lot of 3D graphics and stuff. But, you know, if you put those headsets on, you're not in there more than 5 minutes before you want to vomit. It's like,
it is funny.
Yeah,
I really like that take because I think just all anyone talks about is how close we are to this. And I agree with you. I'm like, no way. Everyone's like, Elon Musk, like, I have a chip. I'm ready to put in people. I was like, I'm the last person in line for that chip. Call end of line.
Also, it's like if you've ever done acid, you know, there's a lot of the actual physical reality we're not experiencing all the time that's out there. It's like the fact that this reality can be so much crisper than we're perceiving. That to me is way more interesting than like, oh, look, we made these pixels look a lot like what's in front of your eyeballs. It's at the end of the day, it's like, what do you really want your attention to go towards? Do you want it to go towards these slot machines that we're creating to like distract ourselves? Or, you know, do you want to see what else we can do with all these tools and maybe take another step? But I mean, that's a big part of the book is all about like escapism, which is where we're at right now. We're in this, I mean, people can't stand being in reality for more than 5 minutes. If you see them on the benches or anywhere, it's like, the phone is there, the eyes are there, the mind is there. It's like to put it down for 5 minutes for some people. I mean, asking someone to meditate, imagine, like, can you sit there for 20 minutes and just breathe?
Here's the thing, though. You can't spell acid without AI. So
that's a good point.
Yeah, or CD. Or CD.
Oh, Alex, yes, we cracked it.
It's pretty crazy, right?
Yeah.
Oh gosh, I forgot what I was going to ask you. Oh yeah, why digital bardos? What is
the bardo is a place that's like in Buddhism, it's in between life and death. Mm. It's a transitional phase, and it's ethereal, and basically like it's not life and it's not death. It's an in-between state. And so the idea with this is that we could create a digital bardo or multiple bardos, and these would be liminal spaces that are in between what's actually life and what's actually death. And the whole idea of transhumanism is just to extend life, this fear of death. I'm like, what's going to happen next? I don't know. Let's get some digital virtual reality. And so that's what the digital Bardo is. It's a hope to like escape death, but it's really just a liminal state. Mm.
David in the comments, by the way, says acid etched comics. Do you think, could you do a variant that has like,
you know what happened in Voyager? I wanted to do a, with we almost did it too. I wanted, it's an acid cover. So it's basically, they didn't want to do the perforation. Mm-hmm. So, but it's blotter paper design. Who was that? Oh, it was Big Bang, I think, in London. What's that? Anyway, for this, I probably will. I don't know if I'm going to do it for this Kickstarter, but I'm going to do one of these every year because I'm trying to do like just smaller publications and slowly grow like more dedicated fans. Because one of my favorite things is hearing back from fans. And I don't know. I think slow growing it with like smaller issues is going to be a lot more fun. So.
Yeah.
The book, the first issue reminded me a lot of a movie that I love that I feel like has cult status now, Sneakers.
Okay.
If you know that, but just elevated to the sort of techno transcendentalism.
Sneakers?
Really? Would you like it? I'll just say,
Well, this I'm basically pitching it to myself. But yeah, okay. Sneakers is the frame, the cold open of Sneakers is these two guys sort of developing, coming up with what the internet, how to like make the internet mess the world up.
Yeah.
Back in like the, I think, late 60s. And then we fast forward later, and it's a Robert Redford movie, and it's how they ended up sort of fucking their lives up and becoming different. One guy becomes a little bit of a cult status and uses it only for his own gain. And that's just the vibe I got out of this.
So, no, definitely this character is like Steve Jobs, West Coast, like Silicon Valley, like thinks he's the center of the universe, self-improvement, all that stuff. There's that, like, what is it? In the middle of the book, there's that little sequence where the montage, where he's like doing all his daily events, and it's all total, like, you know, bro self improvement.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And we got one last request here. This is from Easy Reader. Will a Blacklight poster be offered?
Everyone here wants to trip balls, is what we're saying.
I need to start getting on top of the extras. I think next time around, I'll probably throw some Void Trip Blacklight posters and more stuff I can think of. This one I kind of went low key. So,
well, awesome. I mean, just to talk about that just before we kind of wrap up here. So again, you have 6 days left on the Kickstarter. Definitely need some more backers there. But other than the book, what rewards can people look forward to?
Well, this one, it's basically for, there's like a package for someone who's never read a Mind comic before that has all the print packaging and the digital packaging. I didn't do any like extras or freebies, but I don't usually sell art a lot. In fact, hardly ever. So I put some of those pages up just for anyone who's like a collector. And I have some heavy hitters that I told them to wait till the end of the Kickstarter just to give some other people some chances to pick up some art.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. Yeah. Congrats on the book. It is wild awesome. And good luck with it. And it was great seeing you again.
It was great. I really enjoyed the first issue. Good luck.
All right. Hey, thank you. Appreciate it. All right. Thanks, Justin.
Ooh, I cut him off. That was an accident.
I think he was going to say bye. I think he was just finishing it.
I don't know.
We'll never know. He said buh.
Well, the book is called Digital Bardos. You can check it out on Kickstarter now from King Klaus. And we have one more guest.
Oh, he was going to say beer. He was going to say beer.
He was going to say beer. Oh, man.
Wow. I love that. Boom. There's Wish Granger.
Wow, I'm in my own digital Bardo right now where everything you wish for comes true. I don't know. I don't know how this works, to be honest.
Digital Beardo.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Listen, we have one last guest this evening, incredibly prolific author, probably best known for his Star Wars books, among other things, but he has a new book called Batman Resurrection, which is a continuation of the original 1989 Batman movie that is coming out October 15th from Random House Worlds. Ladies and gentlemen, John Jackson Miller. John, welcome. Hello.
Hey, glad to be here.
Very excited to have you here, and very excited to have the guest behind you, Michael Keaton's Batman. That's awesome.
So
I love that. Did you, this is a stupid question, did you own that before the book and that just happens to be there?
Or... I can answer that for you, Alex. Yes, 100%.
Yeah, I had one of these 85, 89 rather. I actually had it. I had one. I was the editor of my campus newspaper at the University of Tennessee during the summer of 89, and I had assigned myself, you know, the because there's nothing to do that summer, and I assigned myself doing the movie reviews. And so I went and I did the, I reviewed Batman. Oh,
that's awesome.
Yeah, for the University of Tennessee Daily Beacon back then. And I was just, you know, I saw the movie 12 times, you know, saved the stubs.
You've got the stubs.
Wow. Save the stubs. Save the stubs. Save the Taco Bell cup. You know, I wouldn't put anything in it now, but it,
oh my God.
But, you know, I was more or less obsessed with it. And, and you know, it, during the fall, you know, it, when I was running the newspaper, in sort of the bullpen we had there, I had the giant Batman standee behind my desk to project authority, and my staffers
would working.
Firework bands. They would say they were shooting at Batman, but they were really aiming at me. So they gave them. Gave them plausible deniability, but yeah, I mean that was an artifact from the summer of Batman, and it is honestly the case that knowing that I had seen the movie 12 times in the theater is one of the reasons that my editor approached me to do the book.
I was going to say it has to be like you've written so many things, but getting to do this must be sort of a dream come true at a certain
point. I mentioned it when it was announced that I can't say that it was a dream project because I never dreamed it was possible. I wrote A Year of Iron Man, my favorite Marvel character, right out of the gate in my career. Went from that to Star Wars, wrote Knights of the Old Republic, a bunch of other comics. And then wrote novels for Star Wars, Kenobi and New Dawn and various things. And then I wrote 8 Star Trek novels in a row. And so I more or less had a chance to sort of wallow in, you know, all of these franchises that I love with occasional side trips into The Simpsons and Conan and Battlestar Galactica and various other things. And, people would always ask, well, what's the one tie-in or what's the one, you know, media franchise that you haven't worked in that you would love to, or write, you know, write tie-in fiction for. And I would never mention, you know, Tim Burton's Batman because I didn't think it was a thing that you could actually sublicense. Yeah. Now that starts to become possible in the late aughts, early teens when, you know, DC does Batman 66. And I remember at San Diego at the time, I approached the editor and said, hey, if you guys ever want to do Batman 89, you know, as a comic book series, you know, let me know. And he says, well, you're like the 40th person who's asked that. it's not happening anytime soon anyway. And indeed, it did not happen until recently, a couple of years ago, with Sam Hamm, one of the two original screenwriters, and my friend Joaquin Yonas, who did covers for my Star Wars comics, doing the Batman 89 series. And then they now have a second miniseries called Echoes out. That happening, plus you had, Michael Keaton turning up in as Batman in, or a version of Batman in The Flash. And you know, Keaton and Burton having a new moment with Beetlejuice, etc. Yeah, it sort of the stars aligned, and it also just happened to be when I was back working for Random House again, because I had a novel come out this spring, Star Wars: The Living Force, which is the first novel featuring the entire Jedi Council. It is set 1 year before Phantom Menace. We did the novel for the 25th anniversary of Phantom Menace. And so my editor, Tom Holler at Random House, he knows I'm in the middle of the book. And he says, I know you're busy. what would you think if you found out that, you know, we had got the rights to the Burton Batman as opposed to, you know, any other version. And and I'm like,
I know you're busy, but I'm gonna blow your mind.
I screamed and I was like, okay, yeah. I was like, all right. Very rarely have I had I've had just a couple of things in my career in recent years, when I've just been audibly heard outside my office by somebody else in my family. And one was when Ewan McGregor did a video interview talking about having read my Kenobi novel back here.
That's awesome.
And then of course, you know, this, cause it was just an absolute, you know, if I didn't get this project, this would be the beginning of a super villain origin story. It was such a transformative film for comics and comics fans and, you know, comic cinema. And then it also was just important for me personally. And so having the opportunity was just really cool.
So then how did you go from that excitement, that sort of like, I want to say giddiness, like how do you settle in to actually do the work? Like, did you have to like take like wait? How did you start to organize what you wanted to do with this story that is on such a pedestal?
One of the things is I had written about it so often because, again, I wrote about it in the summer of 89. I actually had questions about the movie that I wrote in my articles in 89.
Hilarious.
Yeah, I love this movie, but I have questions. And I used those as part of a springboard in talking with Random House and with Warner Brothers about what I wanted to do. And because I wanted to do a story, I didn't want to do anything that collided with what, or that overlapped with what the comics folks were doing. I said, I want to set my work in between the two films. I'm going to hug the first movie. And I'll be like 3 or 4 months after the events of Batman. And I'm going to write this thing almost like it's I tweeted today that it's almost like a thought experiment. What if you could have written, or what if you could have gotten a novel in October of 1989 that was a sequel to Batman, or a tie-in sequel to Batman, but was written by somebody who not only knew everything that would happen in Batman, but also everything that was going to happen in Batman Returns. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't have been possible. That film had not been completed. Nothing, you know, it wouldn't have even really been possible to do it knowing by October 89 for a book to be releasing then, you wouldn't have even seen the movie when you were writing it. Because the time involved is so long. But I actually have this kind of fun dynamic here of, we're sort of in real time several months after the movie, and we get to address questions like, well, what is the aftermath of the Joker's rampage? What does it mean for this city to have this superhero running around? What does it mean for Commissioner Gordon to change the way he's done police work for 40 years? Because now we've got this guy running around. What does it mean for Alexander Knox to go from covering a character that is a urban myth to now having to actually cover him as, this is my beat, covering
Justice for Knox. More Knox.
Exactly. We've got Knox. We've got all these characters. We've got characters from Batman Returns. What did Max Schreck think about the Joker? What did it was all these dynamics. Smilex. This was a chemical weapons attack on an American city. This is not something that ends overnight. This is something that's got ramifications that would spread out and would allow me in this book to give Bruce Wayne something to do, as opposed to just Batman. I look at the Keaton Batman in Batman 89 or in the Burton movies is distinct from all of the other Bruce Waynes that we've got because he's not pretending to be a irresponsible playboy. he's actually shown as somebody who is a responsible member of the community. You know, he's, you see him in Batman Returns, you know, saying, yeah, we're going to fight you on this power plant, Max Schreck, because the mayor and I have talked and we see eye to eye. I wanted to have in the book a lot of moments where, you know, Bruce Wayne is doing stuff Batman can't and vice versa. And so I really enjoyed that that dynamic. The fact that we've got a novel means I can use, you know, the fact that, you know, it's as long as, you know, the two original books put together, the two original adaptations. This gives us some space to actually have all the action, have all the jokes, have all the character moments, but also get into some of the logistical questions of, well, what do you do if you're Bruce Wayne and the bat signal goes up, but you're in the middle of downtown and your car and your outfit and everything are back up at the Wayne Manor. Just a whole variety of things. So anyway, yeah, I decided let's put this story in between the two, films, relatively close to the first film. And you know, as for being, you know, getting psyched up for it, that wasn't the problem. And researching wasn't the problem because I had memorized. and I've got 2,000 comic books. I've got 45,000 comic books, 2,000 of which are Batman. So
I was going to say 2,000 feels low for a full collection.
I got 45,000 or so, something like that. But it's 2,000 Batman at least. And so I've got the resources. I've got everything I need to lay my hands on. You know, I've got the adaptations. I've got the the versions of the scripts that they didn't make. So I've got all of this stuff in here for some Easter eggs. One of the real challenge for me, it was, I've been writing Star Wars and Star Trek novels all this time, and now I'm on Earth in the modern day, or at least I'm on Earth in 89. And so I've got.
Did you write one sequence where Batman tries to reverse the dilithium crystals, and then they were like, oh, "Oops, got out."
This is the thing. There's just all sorts of things that you don't have to consider. You know, Star Wars science is automatic. We don't ever talk about it. Star Trek, we have the science, but it's ridiculous. All science. It's own thing. If I'm writing this book, I've got to know things like, how firefighters react to a fire. I've got to know things like how autopsies are conducted. I've got to know things like, how bombs are detonated. I had a really interesting search history.
On Wikipedia. You have to leave Wikipedia briefly.
I had to go down some rabbit holes to learn stuff.
Mm-hmm. Do you listen to Danny Elfman's score while you're writing, or do you like do you not like how music?
I can't listen to anything, and it's weird because again, I worked as a journalist, so I was used to actually noise around. But creation, I have tarmac quality airport tarmac quality headphones.
Wow.
So so I can't hear anything. It's amusing because I live at the end of a dead end road in the middle of Wisconsin. And so if I go to the door to see the FedEx guy, he's wondering what the heck's wrong with me because I've got this thing on. But
he's like, hey man, it's already quiet here. Need those.
It's just a thing.
By the way, I don't think the whole Googling bombs thing was helped by living on a dead end street in Wisconsin.
Well, I mentioned that, I started at Marvel 20 years ago. I wrote a Year of Iron Man where I made him Secretary of Defense. And so I'm constantly looking up stuff because that Marvel had marketed me as the Tom Clancy of comics. So this is really the last time I was having to care about how things worked on Earth. every military vehicle, every airplane, everything in the book was real. And so I was doing sequences in Iron Man where, I'm crashing a C5 Galaxy in the reflecting pool in front of the Capitol building. And there's only one way to take it in that you don't actually hit any buildings. And so I'm sending my artist Jorge Lucas down in Argentina, all these maps showing the lines and everything. And this is not long after 9/11. And I realized, oh my gosh, I've got to actually start having, I started putting at the end of all of my emails, okay, any of you NSA guys who are reading this email, it's a comic book. Okay, I'll send you one.
Just great to get back to you, Justin's question a little bit, just in terms of, clearly, like you're saying, you have all of this stuff literally right behind you, literally around your house, but also living in your head. Was there a favorite piece of Batman ephemera that you weren't able to put into the book, that just did not fit, that you wanted to get in there?
There is, so far there's nothing there's nothing that I haven't put in that I shouldn't have put in. Okay. And there's nothing I haven't put in that I haven't had the chance to. One of the things that I did though is, there are moments that are in the movie that are just blown lines. Or editing mm-hmm. problems, or mistakes, these were just little continuity errors here and there. And what I did was I went back into the scripts to see what was really said, what the real line should have been. And so, for example, when the Joker is hovering over the burning Axis Chemical building. Batman has just blown it up, and he says, up in the air, Junior Birdman, missed me, watch me. And that never made any sense to me, because there felt like something was missing there. And first of all, I had to go look up, or I found out later on that Junior Birdman was actually an organization for kids who wanted to be pilots in the 1940s. And that was their slogan, Junior Birdman in the Air. And then I found out that the line in the script is, missed me, I'm gonna kill, you ought to come over to the parade route, I'm gonna kill 1,000 people an hour until you do. Ha ha ha, watch me. And
that's quite different.
Yeah, and so there's context to that line. And so I can't change what's in the movie, but I do have somebody saying that he said that line in continuity. They said that he said that line to one of his henchmen, Bob, somebody who survived. and so that line gets into the book, sort of like that. And again, it's a silly little thing, but there's just a number of moments there where people who are, somebody has already caught this. I have a reference to the fact that the people in daylight, and that he has a different kit that he realizes he needs for daylight, the uniform. Mm. Well, that was something that they discovered while they were making the movie. There was originally going to be a sequence during the day of Batman. And again, that's a weird sequence that is, when Joker shows up at Vicki Vale's apartment, shows up, shoots Bruce Wayne, he just ends up delivering a present and saying a poem and leaving. In the original screenplay, he was going to kidnap her and take her to the one of the bicentennial celebrations, and Bruce was going to change to Batman in the car and mm-hmm. then race out there on a horse. And they did not film that. And the word I heard was they screen tested and that the suit just didn't look right in daylight.
That tracks. And so, and on a horse, that's weird.
Well, and so you never see it. And so somebody, one of the early readers, saw that I had this whole sequence about him having to have a daylight kid. have a daylight uniform. And he's like, you're calling back on that, aren't you? And I'm like, yeah, and I'm amazing you know about it.
Wow.
But well, again, this is just the fun debris that's been in my head all these years.
Yeah.
No, I love that you're getting it out and putting it on the page of this amazing book. I will ask, just to put you on the spot, since you said this earlier, now that you've gotten to do this thing you never thought you could do, what is the next... white whale that you want to go after?
I have already got the second book in this series ready to go.
Wow,
that's it. Another of the same whale. We're gonna get that next whale.
Son of
gonna that get whale. The whale's brother. Get
yeah,
Moby we'll, Dick's brother.
Yeah, I'm not ready to go, but yeah, it's awesome. This is not a one and done proposition on this.
Awesome. I want to ask a follow up. I don't know if you can tell me, but if this takes place immediately after Batman 1989, does the next thing take place after Batman Returns?
I can't go anywhere near
ooh,
that.
Okay. Ooh. All right.
There you go.
Confirmed. John,
but when you ask, is there anything I haven't been able to do? Well, I knew I had more chances.
Yeah, that's so awesome.
I'm really happy with how the book came out. We've already announced that one of the villains is Clayface. And the trick with it is I am matching the technology, the aesthetics of the Tim Burton movies. Also the power levels. I mean, there's no metahumans in the Tim Burton movies.
Yeah.
We don't have the Riddler using a device so they can read people's dreams. That when we see that in the third movie, that already feels off from the first two. Also, all the neon feels off from the first two. You have this. This feeling, if you're going to do a character, let's say they had done a Tim Burton movie with a Clayface character in it. It's not going to be the shambling mound from the comics or the cartoons. It's not going to be a blob. It's going to be the Golden Age Clayface when he was an actor. And it's going to be a master of disguise kind of a thing. Or it's going to be somebody who's got a deformity, a macabre thing going on, because again, that's a Tim Burton thing, where you have sort of freak show elements in a number of his movies, and you can kind of visualize that whatever it would be practical effects, and of course it was 1989 anyway, so it'd be practical effects, but it just. One of my goals is the characters need to sound right to the ear of the person who's seen the movies and heard the movies. And they also need to feel right in terms of, I'm not introducing something into this universe that is discordant, that's jarring.
Yeah. John, this all sounds amazing. I can't wait for people to check this out. But before we let you go, what else would you like to plug? Obviously, this is the big thing, but anything else folks should be checking out?
Okay, well, we have a lot of stuff. I'm at New York Comic Con in a week, and so we have so many books going there. It's ridiculous because everything I've done seems to have been reprinted in the last year. That Star Wars novel, The Living Force, is out in hardcover. It's got a cool map in it that I did. And that is also going to have a trade paperback, which I think is coming out later this year. The Knights of the Old Republic comic series that I wrote all 57 issues of. Marvel had reprinted the first Epic collection for the first time in like 9 years. That came out this summer. But now they're actually reprinting the Giant Omnibus. So that's already been solicited. These things sold out and have been going for like 300 hours. So I'm glad they've got them back again.
Oh, nice.
So this is Knights of the Old Republic. The entire series is going to be in Star Wars Legends, The Old Republic Omnibus Volume 1. That is coming out in March, but you can pre-order it now from your retailers. We put out a 10th anniversary edition of Star Wars: A New Dawn, which was my first novel with the Lucasfilm Story Group. It's actually the first work at all with the Lucasfilm Story Group, but that's the Rebels prequel novel that we did. And there's just a bunch of other stuff. And as I said, I'm at New York Comic Con. I'm doing signing events for this book. The launch event is in Appleton, Wisconsin on release day, October 15th. But then after New York, we also have a bunch of signings in Chicago and then Twin Cities Con in Minneapolis. So I'm hitting a lot of different places. It's been a lot of fun.
Awesome. John, congratulations. I'm so glad you got to finally achieve this dream. That is so cool. The impossible dream. You dreamed the impossible dream. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Great chatting. Have a great night.
Appreciate it.
All right.
Later.
There we go. That was John Jackson Miller. The book is called Batman Resurrection. I think I mentioned it at the beginning, but if not, there you go. And that's coming out October 15th from Random House Worlds. And now we're going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions.
Let's do it.
For audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. And I'll glance at the comments on Instagram as well. They can be about absolutely anything. Just let us know. Happy to answer any questions you like.
Yes. Ooh, we got any question.
Oh, here we go. Edward Doherty says, Alex, can you please say, Justin, you're my number one guy.
Wow.
Is that all right?
That was very good.
Thank you. You know, funny thing, I should have mentioned this to John, but this is not much of a story, but Batman clearly still connecting with the kids of today. My son, who is 10, went to one of his best friend's birthday parties, and it was a movie-watching birthday party, and they watched Batman 1989. So there you go. That was totally his choice. They still like it. That's pretty awesome.
That is very good. I mean, that movie also, we talk about it mostly in a comic book context, but I feel like that was a seminal movie for everyone who was like, wow, you can make movies like this? Like, that movies can be sort of different than normal, quote-unquote, normal movies?
Yeah.
Very good. We do have an answer to a question that is bridging the gap between the public comments and the private comments. Schoeichler says, I'm saddened that Star Wars seems to be abandoning MMPBs. And John in the private chat is saying that it's that bookstores don't want them anymore, not that Star Wars is abandoning them. So
interesting.
There's
bookstores. I think we should burn all bookstores down. What's your take on that?
I think capitalism is mostly doing that. So
sad. All right. Michael Tobin says, Justin, where's Dolly?
Hello, Dolly. She just shrunk a little bit and became a map to upstate New York.
I'll
give you the full story. I live in an apartment in New York. My wife's
great beginning. Good
great
order.
Beginning. Well, my wife's grandmother's piano it's been in storage forever. And they were like, we have to move this thing. And my wife, who sometimes refers to our apartment as a coffin, like it's so small that she calls it a coffin. We now have a piano in this room over here. And so Dolly naturally had to be in the piano room.
Oh, nice. Are the kids enjoying the piano?
They are learning to play the piano now, which is nice.
That's great. You can really monetize that, I bet.
Oh, yes. Sick. Great, Alex.
All the Game says, hey, guys, following the Joker 2 disaster, should WBDC limit their Elseworlds output to the projects produced by Matt Reeves? I guess my counterpoint question is, aren't they kind of already limiting their Elseworlds project to Joker 2? That's pretty much it.
Well, let me throw even a further counterpoint. Elseworlds is a nice way of saying, here's the projects that were already greenlit before we decided to do this other thing. So I will call them, it's very negative to say vestigial projects, but we'll probably be the last of them. Maybe Matt Reeves will get to make another one depending on how the second Batman movie does. And Penguin seems to be doing well.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, Penguin is doing well enough for HBO. Obviously, everybody's hyped for Batman Part 2. There's no way that's not going to do well. I bet we get at least one other TV series out of that for sure. But there is the other things to this point that Matt Reeves is working on. Like, there's a bunch of rumored villain stuff. Maybe a Clayface movie from Mike Flanagan, which sounds awesome to me. I hope that happens. Also, possibly a Mr. Freeze movie, from which is weird. It sounds like they're working on potentially. But there's also the Dynamic Duo movie, which is an animated movie about Jason Todd and Dick Grayson that's going to mix live action, puppetry, 3D animation, and regular traditional animation, which also sounds sick. So, like, I don't know. I think that indicates, just to contradict everything we said, that I think James Gunn is using as much cred as he has right now to be like, let's do creative projects that are about artists that sound interesting, and then we'll see how long that lasts after Superman comes out.
Well, but I also think, like, I don't think you have to. I think TV and movies can exist at the same time without being one continuity. Mm-hmm. I feel like everybody tried that, and it actually wasn't really working, especially that the MCU movies and TV, having them cross over was nobody. It never really worked, I don't think. So I do think it's fine to just have it, TV and movies especially, be separate. Mm-hmm.
We shall see what happens. Lots of unknowns there. Schreckler says, what are some of the weirdest search history rabbit holes you've gone down?
I have one. I had this idea for a comic, and so I got a deep dive into mind plagues from the past, like the dance plague that went around mm-hmm. in, like, I want to say 18th century Europe. And I went way too deep into how different things around the world throughout history have just been, oh, a group of people just started laughing one day and then it ruined a month of time.
That's a really good one. This was not a very deep hole that I went down, and I don't remember how I started this, but I ended up looking up the history of Doritos, and they actually do have kind of a crazy origin. I feel like I talked about this on the show before. No,
I don't know. I don't know the origin of Doritos. So
the origin of Doritos, just if you had a quick guess, Justin, where would you say Doritos come from? Like originally,
I guess like maybe like a very cool ranch, like a very popular.
You're close.
Ranch.
You're sort of close. They are from a popular place that's near a ranch, specifically Disneyland is where they come from.
Wow.
Yeah, there was a Mexican restaurant on Disneyland that made, I'm forgetting the actual name, but it was basically like, they fried up tortillas and they put some spices on it, and that was pretty much it. And it was super popular. I don't even think they called them Doritos at that point, but they would sell out all the time. It was like the most popular dish in Disneyland. Somehow they independently owned the restaurant as well. And the guy who owned Frito-Lay went to the restaurant and was like, this is great. I got to buy the recipe from you. And he did.
The recipe? Fry these tortillas and dump some spices on them.
I don't know. People love them. So he bought them, and then they started mass producing them. So the first Doritos were, they actually put out like an anniversary bag recently or something. It's like taco seasoning flavor. So that's basically it. They were that. Then they had plain Doritos. And it wasn't until like the 1960s or 70s that they introduced cheese flavored Doritos, and that's when it really started to explode.
Really caught on.
But yeah, this was just, I was like, that can't possibly be true about Disneyland, and I just went down a hole of like, yep, wow, actually it is.
So much of our technology and food comes from Disney World. It's really beautiful.
Disneyland.
Sorry. Disneyland. Disney World came later.
This is from Chris Sova. So I joined one of my local comic book shop's book club. I'm newer to comics. This month was DC's New Frontier, and I feel like it's just all over. I read Absolute Power and love the Justice League stuff. What would be a good modern Justice League series to read? Great question.
Modern is an interesting word in there, because, I mean, if you want just like a great classic Justice League, what about Grant Morrison's series? What was the, was that the one with Aztec and all of that?
Yeah, all of the I mean, this is not modern because that's going back like 20 or 30 years at this point. But Grant Morrison's 20. Run on Justice League is great. Mark Waid's run on League is great. Like, I'd recommend pick up Tower of Babel. That's a classic one we were talking about the other day. But also, what other Justice League stuff is good? Like, the Scott Snyder stuff is great, but it's so insanely complicated. I'd be hesitant to be like, yeah, sure, just jump into that. You'll love Perpetua.
Well, especially if you're like, Absolute Power is insane. It's like, well, this is equally insane. So yeah. Maybe.
I do think I'm feeling pretty hopeful about Justice League Unlimited, the new title from Mark Waid and Dan Mora, I think.
It does feel like sort of a grand reset to a more stable storytelling situation as opposed to the deep continuity focus that it's been lately.
Yeah. Other Justice League runs. I'll have to think about that some more.
Especially modern, I'm trying to think, because those are the ones that feel to me like a classic, like, easy in, easy out story.
Like, you could suggest maybe the first trade of the New 52, just because that was specifically a springboard jumping on point with all these characters refreshed and new. And you got Jim Lee art on that, which is amazing. So that might be a good one to check out, potentially.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Stray Bullet says, since Pete is not on tonight, let's speak openly now about these secret quizzes. You guys got any hints or inside scoop? Help a brother out.
Here's the thing. If you think Pete would ever tell Alex and I the hints about his quiz, you're insane. There's no way.
Yeah. All I would say is we are not behind him on this one.
Yeah. We're not right behind him when he's on the show.
You know I mean? We would rather box him than find out what his secret quiz is.
We'll keep him in a box.
Yeah.
Or on a front-facing box.
Yeah, something like that. But you get it. Kyle Jones says, is the art is good, but Pete's not there to see it. Is it Sill's super tight bananas? That's actually, we should get King Klaus back on the show to answer this one. This is one of those like, transcendental.
Book. I think Picasso first asked that question, and there is no answer.
Yeah. Edward Doherty says, Rob Liefeld got Youngblood back. Sandman Mystery Theater is back. What's the most successful case of an old comic with a year's old gap being made again?
Ooh, I mean, I think Miracle Man
is
perhaps the best example of that. The Neil Gaiman comic that was famously tied up in a lot of litigation and then came back and has
and
been
now given everything going on with Neil Gaiman is probably not actually gonna get finished again, so
who knows what's happening with all of that.
Yes. Stanley says, do you guys ever get caught up in sports hype? I think I could speak for both of us and say no, absolutely not.
I'm a Buffalo Bills fan, and football is a sport that I follow pretty enthusiastically, so I'm in the sports hype, especially right now.
All in the Game says, have you seen the new HBO show, The Franchise, that satirizes superhero movie making? Yes, I've watched the full season of that. For anybody who did check it out, first episode, I did not think was that great. It's really getting its footing. But after that, it's kind of off to the races. The third episode is the best, most laugh out loud funny one. So if you're about the first episode, stick with it. Daniel Bruhl is great in it. Billy Magnuson is great. Ava Iacash is excellent as
Love
well.
Iacash.
So good.
Because that only one episode has aired of that.
Right? Yes. Yeah, that was
I haven't watched yet.
Definitely the weakest one. It's definitely like, we have 15 characters we all need to set up. Here we go. But I enjoyed the season. Joshua Wright says, any guilty pleasure reality TV shows series?
Guilty pleasure. All of my pleasure is innocent, I would say, and free.
Yeah, I don't really watch. I know this is a bad answer, but I don't really have any guilty pleasure stuff. I either watch it and enjoy it or don't.
Wow, what a fully satisfied human you are. I mean, I would say on the opposite side, I was like, I think all of the things I watch are guilty pleasures. Like, I don't know if I'm watching anything holistically. I have watched many seasons of The Bachelor and was involved in a Bachelor Fantasy League years ago.
Okay.
Which was actually fun because it gives you a reason to be excited about different people as opposed to being like, that person's being weird. But I haven't watched in a while. I guess Top Chef is the the reality series that I watch when it's on, and I do love that. Also, Alone is another series that I sort of dip in and out of depending on the season.
Pablo D. Martinez says, so are you ready for Rob Liefeld's return to Youngblood? Justin, I'll turn that one over to you.
The idea of a superhero team that is also engaged with the brand management of their own team is something that I've longed to see in the comic book pages. I just wish we could get a take on that, you know?
That would be nice.
I'm curious what Rob Liefeld will have to say. I haven't really responded a ton to his recent, the books that he's done, but this does feel like something that he maybe has a little bit more footing on. His Deadpool feels like he's like, look, I'm good at Deadpool. It's like, you don't need to prove that. Just tell us a good Deadpool story. But with Youngblood, maybe he does have some stuff that he was planning back in the day or that he can re-explore here.
We shall see. And that is it for your audience questions. Whoop, 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 whoop. Now, listen, normally we would do trivia, but Pete is not here.
And that's his whole thing.
So I'll tell you what. We're going to do this anyway. Why don't we do a donation to hurricane relief, to Hurricane Helene? Obviously, there's another one, Milton, coming. I'm going to put the link in the chat right now. This was actually, I'll give a shout out. This is a great suggestion from Stray Bullet here. But we are going to donate to, wait, oh, I just had it open and then I closed it. It is Feeding the Carolinas, which is helping support neighbors. Obviously, they're not our direct neighbors, but we care about them regardless through Hurricane Helene. So we're going to do a donation to that. I'm going to keep that open right now. So I do that in a moment. But there you go. Thank you to Stray Bullet for the suggestion. Obviously, money is tight all over, but if anybody can donate to that, you can check it out at 4agc.com/donate/Helene. There you go. And nice. We are going to donate some more money to our local comic book shops this week because new comic books are coming out all the time. What are you looking forward to, Justin?
Oof, lots of stuff out there. I've been really loving Dennis Camp's Ultimates. A new issue of that is coming out. I really like Dennis Camp does such a great job of sort of getting under the skin of the different characters he's writing and bringing a very unique and worldly take on the characters. And I feel like that's what he's been doing in this Ultimates run. It feels different, feels fresh. I love the She-Hulk character that he created. And looking forward to more of that. And Public Domain number 9 is coming out. I believe this issue is centered on a Comic-Con. And it sort of feels like what the whole series has been building toward in a weird way. So I can't wait to find out what... this series, Chip Zdarsky does such a great job of like just setting all of his characters and pitting them against each other. We've gotten little tastes. I just have a suspicion this is the issue where shit starts to blow up, like anytime anyone goes to a Comic-Con.
100%. A lot of good stuff coming out tomorrow. I'm looking forward to, of course, Absolute Batman number 1 from Scott Snyder and Nick Dragota. That's a big one. Art from Nick Dragota in particular looks absolutely insane, so very excited about that. Sentinels number 1, lots of hype on that one from Alex Pakdendal about mutant hunters in the new From the Ashes era, so that should be interesting. And I'll also give a shout out to Green Lantern Civil Corps Special number 1 that's teaming up Philip Kennedy Johnson and Jeremy Adams. Both of their runs on Green Lantern have been great, so mashing them together should also be great.
Very cool. One other one I would shout out real quick is Crocodile Black number 5. I think this closes up this series that Philip Kennedy Johnson did that has been so dark but such a great just character study, and the way that he shows this descent along with the art by Somm has been unbelievable, and it's coming to a close in this issue that comes out tomorrow.
And all those books and many more are going to be in our Stack podcast that drops in the Comic Book Club feed and also the dedicated Stack feed Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Check it out. And folks, that is it for this week's show. couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Anthony Del Cole for coming on to talk about Romeo versus Juliet, a Kill Shakespeare story, out November 19th from Gemstone. Also, King Klaus talking about Digital Bardos. That's on Kickstarter now. John Jackson Miller for talking about Batman Resurrection, coming out October 15th from Random House Worlds. We're going to have another big packed show next week. Tim Leong is going to be back to talk about Marvel.
It's like Old Homes Week.
It's catching on! Marvel Super Graphic, a visual guide to the Marvel Comics universe. Also, Matt Boers is going to be here to talk about Justice Warriors, Vote Harder. And Tiffany Babb is going to be coming on to talk about The Comics Courier, a new printed comics journalism biannual, which sounds really, really cool. A couple of other things to plug. Comic Book Club News, our daily news podcast. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast. We are recapping Agatha All Along. Sons of a Gun, our DC podcast, talked about the Penguin. Also talked about Joker 2. We got an episode on that, so check that out. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show and all the shows we do. At Comic Book Live on Twitter/X. Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram. ComicBookClubLive.com. For this podcast and many more, until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
And Riley Trahan. Stay twisted, everybody. He's like a Joker.